Welcome back to New World Next Week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com, not open to considering third-party takeover proposals. We've got that story, plus the media's uncharitable trust. But first, Amazon goes nuclear to invest more than $500 million to develop small modular reactors. Amazon Web Services is investing more than $500 million in nuclear power, announcing three projects from Virginia to Washington State. AWS, Amazon's subsidiary in cloud computing, CIA being their biggest customer, has a massive and increasing need for a clean energy as it expands its services into generative AI. It's also part of Amazon's path to net zero carbon emissions. AWS announced that it signed an agreement with Dominion Energy, Virginia's utility company, to explore the development of Small Modular Nuclear Reactor, SMR, near Dominion's existing North Anna Nuclear Power Station. Nuclear reactors produce no carbon emissions. An SMR is an advanced type of nuclear reactor with a smaller footprint that allows it to be built closer to the grid. They also have faster construction time than traditional reactors, allowing them to come online sooner. Amazon is the latest large tech company to buy into nuclear power to fuel the growing demands from data centers. And James, what a massive coinkydink. The other main intelligence-connected tech front company is doing the exact same thing at the exact same time. Google turns to nuclear to power its AI data centers. This coming from the BBC. Google has signed a deal to use small nuclear reactors to generate the vast amounts of energy needed to power its AI data centers. The company says its agreement with Kairos Power will see it start using its first reactor this decade and bring more online by 2035. James, we're getting a little bit past 2030 because it's getting so close. The companies did not give any details about how much the deal is worth or where the plants will be built. Thank you very much. Technology firms are increasingly turning to nuclear sources of energy to supply the electricity used by the huge data centers that drive the godlike, life-saving AI. The grid needs new electricity sources to support AI technology, says Michael Terrell, Senior Director for Energy and Climate at Google. I think Terrell is also the Blade Runner evil corporation, James. This agreement helps accelerate a new technology to meet energy needs cleanly and reliably and unlock the full potential of AI for everyone. Made up pictures and deer antler filters for everyone. James, what a time to be alive.
Deer antler filters?
You know, all the filters everybody uses and puts a goofy note, like, is this
like
what
TikTok
we need?
Or Instadork. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Wow. I'm glad it took me a second to process that. It sounded like word salad for a second. Yeah. Just goes to show how up with the current lingo I am. Anyway, yeah, exactly. The marvels of the AI age. Yay. Thank you. But yes, brought to you by lots and lots and lots and lots of electricity. Wow. Who would have thought? And now cue all the surprised environmentalists going, what? I was told that the entire modern world was going to run on solar and wind and unicorn farts. What's going on? Oh, that's not going to happen. It's going to be lots and lots of nuclear, which of course, people in my audience will know. They'll remember, for example, my editorial from 2022 on green energy is a scam. It isn't meant to work. And that brings us to this doorstep, because as, of course, the bot-controlled, paid, and eugenicist-driven modern environmental movement has been taught that the one and only thing that matters is carbon dioxide and maybe some methane and other greenhouse gases, so the solution will be nuclear. Well, let's ask the country of Japan how that's working out for them. We have this from September 4th. Lack of task checking halted debris removal at Fukushima unit. And then the follow-up, TEPCO may resume debris extraction from Fukushima reactor next week. Yay, okay. So, yeah, for those who aren't aware, the Fukushima disaster is obviously still ongoing and expected to be ongoing for, I don't know, half a century or so before they can actually really remove all of the spent fuel. Yay. So what could go wrong? But how about this reality check from just last couple of days? Japan's voters put nuclear energy on back burner despite safety worries. And we have the follow-up to that. Japan shifting back to nuclear to ditch coal, power AI. So there you go. This is this is the situation that we're being put in. It's not just the Fanksters, but the Fanksters are obviously going to be involved in it too, because they are up to their snoot, up to their eyeballs in this. If only there were a way, to get all of this deer antler filter wonder and goodness without all of that electricity. If only we had a more efficient way of doing it. Oh, hey, actually, as it turns out, just coinkadinkly, there actually is. The brainheads and brainiacs are working on something. And people who saw my recent editorial on scientists create organic slave computers, what could go wrong, might have an inkling of what that involves. But if you don't, boy, you are in for an interesting story. So I will link that up in the show notes if people are interested. But yeah, long story short, don't worry. They have a proposed solution to this energy crisis, and it is nightmarish. Appropriately enough for the spooktacular season here.
Which was a theme recently on a New World Next Week episode, the false fix to what is a real issue or a real concern. Google and Amazon not having enough power to run AI doesn't really feel like a life-threatening, really important thing that we need to spend a lot of time on. But also remember, your car and gas stove, those are bad, and those are going to have to go, though. That's how we get started on New World Next Week, episode 569, into our 15th year here at New World Next Week. And I think a really important one for our second story, James. 23andMe reportedly faces bankruptcy. What's going to happen to all that DNA since it was founded nearly two decades ago? 23andMe, which I believe was essentially bought by Google and run by ex-Google monsters and Anne and Susan. One of them's dead. The sister's all running it. 23andMe has grown into one of the largest biotech companies in the world. Millions of people have used its simple genetic testing service, which involves ordering a saliva test, spitting into a tube, and sending it back to the company for a detailed DNA analysis. But now the company is on the brink of bankruptcy. James, I was reporting on this story weeks ago, and their stock basically tanked. I won't dare to go check it out right now. It was basically like 35 cents. That's now raised concerns about what will happen to the troves of genetic data it has in its possession. The company's chief executive, Anne Wojcicki, said she is committed to customer privacy and will maintain our current privacy policy. But what can customers of 23andMe themselves do to make sure their highly personal genetic data is protected, aside from never doing this stupid thing in the first place, if you've already crossed that bridge? And should we be concerned about other companies that also collect our DNA? Yes. 23andMe is one of the largest companies in the crowded marketplace for direct-to-consumer genetic testing. And again, James, you always gotta wonder the rush into the market. These people, they think they're gonna all get rich doing this? Possibly, probably. Is it part of a larger ploy for what we see? Probably. Founded in 2006 in California, launching its spit test and personal genome service the following year at an initial cost of $999. This test won Time Magazine's Invention of the Year in 2008. Customers eagerly took up the opportunity to spit in a tube and mail it back in a few weeks, and when the results were ready, they could find out about their health, ancestry, other things like food preferences, fear of public speaking, cheek dimples, just how Jewish you are. The price of testing kits rapidly dropped. It is currently $79 and falling. The company expanded globally and by 2015 had 1 million sucker customers. Firm went public in 2021 and initially the stock price soared. As of 2024, however, the company claims 14 million people have taken a 23andMe DNA test. They rode the wave of popular excitement and investor interest in genetics. And of course, they weren't alone. By 2022, the direct-to-consumer genetic testing market was valued at $3 billion. So $3 billion worth, again, of people giving away their very life essence. The three largest players, 23andMe, Ancestry DNA, and MyHeritage, together hold the genetic data of almost 50 million people globally. Dozens of smaller players, too, with some focusing on emerging markets, such as Map My Genome in India, and 23Mofang and WeGene in China, of course. So once, of course, they get those done, then they'll have 6 billion people on the DNA rolls. 23andMe has had a rapid downfall after the 2021 high of its public listing. Values dropped more than 97%. That's almost all the percents. In 2023, it suffered a major data breach affecting almost 7 million users, and they already settled the class action lawsuit for a paltry $30 million. Last month, this is when it really all hit the news, James, and I kind of saw this in my news feeds. I was like, this seems important. All their independent directors all resigned from the board. Amid the news, the original founder was planning to take the company private once more. What this might mean for the vast stores of genetic data is unclear. In a statement to The Conversation, a 23andMe spokesperson said Wojcicki is not open to considering third-party takeover proposals, and in the event that any future ownership change, the company's existing data privacy agreements with customers would remain in place unless and until customers are presented with and agree to new terms and statements. Click, yep, whoop, I already agreed. I thought I was just logging into the website. I didn't know I completely threw out any legal rights I had. And after only receiving appropriate notice of any new terms under applicable data protection laws. James, do you know people that did this?
I don't. I haven't talked to anyone who did. Didn't your brother do this?
They all did it, man.
Yeah.
All my family's DNA has all been sold off.
Exactly, which means anyone in your family does it. They essentially have you. Right? Yeah, that's the way it works. So I don't know, maybe some cousin or aunt or something has done it, and I don't know. But yeah, as you say, I mean, they've got so much genetic data here. And what's going to happen to that? You know, this raises an incredibly, incredibly important question that goes way beyond just 23andMe, although obviously that's important. But the question of who owns your DNA. And this is something that I have had a lot to say about over the years. So forgive me for being a bit self-pluggy here, but there's a lot to cover. So for example, back in 2009, I wrote an article about announcing the DNA control grid, about some mainstream media coverage of the fact that, oh, by the way, if you've been born in a hospital basically anywhere in the Western developed world in the past 50 years, your DNA was collected at birth through the blood spot test, right? They do the heel prick test thing and collect your blood. And those blood samples have been collected and stored, and it's different in different localities. In Australia, it's different than in America, for example. But essentially, either the government itself or the Department of Defense or some private contractor gets to keep and store those records and then use them in genetic tests in the future without your knowledge or consent. Oh, by the way, did you know that? Well, anyway, and next with the weather. I mean, that was just widely announced in 2009 as this ongoing half-century-long story that no one knew about. I followed that up in 2010 with an episode of the Corporate World podcast on who owns your DNA. In 2015, I was writing about DNA shaming. Welcome to Orwell's Nightmare, talking about the advertising firm Ogilvy and Mather. They came up with this spiffy new advertising campaign to stop littering in Hong Kong by taking and collecting litter, like cigarette butts, from the street, getting the DNA analysis, and then constructing, well, this is what the face of that person would look like, and then they would put them up on billboards. This person is a litterer. And it's a crazy story. You've got to see the video that accompanies that to understand it. I did a 2019 propaganda watch on First They Came Through Your Fingerprints, ... talking about the growing DNA database of everyone and everything for every possible reason, and FBI and others collecting DNA, even without any actual criminal charges or criminal investigation. I wrote in 2021 about the next threat, DNA exploitation, and how even the U.S. National Counterintelligence and Security Center was writing a warning that your DNA and is going to be gathered and used against you by the Chinese, of course. I mean, don't worry when the Americans do it. It's one of those dastardly Chinese. So anyway, I have a lot to say about this. It's a really, really important subject as we blindly stumble into the Gattaca future. Here we go.
Yeah, don't let TikTok have your private information, so we should ban it, you know, just to give all your information to the American surveillance corporations. James, 2009, that was when we started this very show here, New World Next Week. And yeah, I think they all did it in my family. Lots of other extended family folks did it as well. Because I remember my mom saying, when my brother got his back, it says we're Jewish. which was a real surprise to my 100% Italian father, and then the Native American and Irish, that's the other side. Again, if I were a conspiracy theorist, I would think they're screwing with the results because this is, they don't care. This is just part of another giant psychological campaign. They've already got your information. That was the main part of the mission. Whatever crap they tell you is, I think, incidental to them. Two things. James, you ever heard of Baroness von Sketch from the CBC? Female sketch comedy group. I'd never heard of them. Someone posted the clip. It was actually just the raw video itself into my Media Monarchy server, so I didn't know who it was. It wasn't linked to a social media or YouTube site. And I was told this is Baroness von Sketch, a female sketch comedy group that's, I guess, on the CBC. My introduction to them was this great skit about being 98%. They all go around the table. I got my genetic results. It says I'm 12% this and 47% that. And then it gets to the final woman. It says I'm 98% dumbass for giving away my DNA to a company that owns it forever. And it also says I'm 20% Mexican. Oh, yay! Oh, that's awesome. It's pretty fantastic. Always looking for good sketch comedy. I know it's on the CBC. How rebel can it be? The other one, and I mean, that is 100% true, that you are 98% dumbass if you gave away your DNA without thinking about who would own this. The one I'm not so sure of, James, but interesting nonetheless, I don't know if you saw this when this goes back to 2021, man sends lizard saliva to 23andMe for DNA testing, exposing total fraud of companies' claims of human ancestry. That one you can find on Natural News, and you can find it on Reddit. There does appear to be video documentation. I can't prove this, but it is another point of detail on this New World Next Week, episode 569. James, anything else to add before we rush into our final story?
I will certainly not defend the CBC, but kids in the hall, I'll defend them. They, you know, they were somewhat rebel, weren't they?
Well, that's, yeah. Kids in the Hall, Whitest Kids You Know, they were on IFC. They had some money funding behind them. I think some of the most subversive, fantastic comedy has come from sketch comedy over the last 20 years. James, this is, I think, if not an annual installment, this is definitely a regular recurring type of segment on New World Next Week. I don't know if you were able to go through and tally all the previous times we've discussed this type of story. Americans' trust in media remains at trend low. This is from Gallup, the poll people. Americans continue to register record low trust in the mass media, with 31% expressing a great deal or fair amount of confidence, so only 31% say they like it. For the media, for the news to report fully, accurately, and fairly, similar to last year's 32%, except down another percent point. America's trust in the media, such as newspapers, television, and my poor beleaguered radio, first fell to 32% in 2016 when Orange Man was first discovered to be bad, and did so again last year. For the third consecutive year, more U.S. adults have no trust at all in the media, 36%, than trusted a great deal or fair amount. Another 33% of Americans express not very much confidence. Gallup first asked this question in 1972 when things were kind of crazy politically here in the States, and it's measured in most years since 1997. In three readings in the 1970s, trust ranged from 68 to 72%. Yet by Gallup's next readings in the late 1990s and early 2000s, smaller majorities of 51 and 55% trusted the news media. The latest findings are from a poll conducted pretty recently, September 3rd through the 15th, which includes Gallup's annual update on trust in media and other civic and political entities in the U.S. As has been the case historically, partisans have different levels of confidence in the media to report the news fully, accurately, and fairly. What does that mean? Depending on which flavor of soda you like is which news you think doesn't lie to you for arms manufacturers and pharmaceutical makers. 54% of Democrats, 27% of independents, and 12% of the hated Republicans say they have a great deal or fair amount of trust in the media. Independents' trust matches their record low in 2022, while Democrats and Republicans are statistically similar to their historical low points in more ways than one. After dropping precipitously to the trend low of 51% in 2016, Democrats' trusted media ranged from 68 to 76%. between 2017 and 2022, but fell only to 58% last year. So isn't it interesting the folks who are accused of running all the media say they still have a pretty high amount of trust in their media that they run? James?
Yeah, funny how that works, isn't it? Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And you're exactly right. We do cover this every, or if not every year, pretty much every year. And it's usually, I think, around October. So I was going to go through and pull up every single time, but yeah, that's a lot of work. People can have fun exploring our archives and discovering the fact that, yes, we've been documenting this year after year after year. Yes, record low after record low after record low in terms of people's trust in the media. And if you ask me, it's still 31% too high, but hey, it's being chipped away at. Anyway, yeah, of course, it speaks to the fact that more people than ever are understanding that, oh yeah, you know, these pharmaceutical manufacturers and weapons manufacturers and other people who are funding this media into existence, maybe they don't have our best interest in mind. Maybe they're not committed to nothing but the truth. And that's, at this point, I mean, what else could you possibly say to someone who still trusts in the establishment media? That's the way it is, says Walter Cronkite, the literal voice of the owl at the cremation of care ritual in Bohemian Grove. Again, what more needs to be said? So, just in the interest of the fact that, as I say, we've been documenting this year after year, and yes, the dinosaur media, the comet has struck, they're just finding out about it in recent years. But in the interest of that type of thing that we document every year, I think that we didn't get a chance to document this year, which we do every single year because of our various breaks this year. So let's put it on the record. Notice on the continuation of the national emergency with respect to persons who commit, threaten to commit, or support terrorism. Yes, the 9/11 emergency order that Bush, I can't even say that name, thankfully, first signed on September 23rd, 2001, was thankfully renewed by Biden, or the people who puppeteer Biden, on September 18th of this year. So yes, for the 23rd year in a row, the President of the United States of America has continued the threat of terrorism and the emergency orders that upends the Constitution, or whatever was left of it, in the name of fighting the boogeyman. Yes, that has happened again as well. So we can pretty much set our clocks by it. September, whatever puppet is in charge, like Trump or Biden or anyone else, is going to renew the terror threat. And in October, we're going to find out that less people trust the media than ever. So anyway, yay.
Then we have to wait maybe six more months to find out how little effect the flu vaccine for this season had. That is New World Next Week, episode 569. We'll have the New World Next Week laugh. How about that? Hey, huge thanks, James, for joining me in the Media Monarchy Discord last week for the octopus murders. I guess, man, on the one hand, it was everything I thought it would be. And then there were moments where I was like, this is slicker and more insidious than I would have thought. But maybe it's still turning people on to the information. What did you think of it?
I agree. I think there were points in there that were, I mean, there was definitely some legit info in there. And then there were other things that made me think, well, what are they doing here? So, I would recommend it if people have a chance to check it out. Why not check it out? It at least has, as I say, some info. And if you've got your critical thinking cap on, you probably won't fall down any of the traps that they've set for you. But anyway, it was fun watching it in there, in the Discord, with the Media Monarchy community. And you've got some funny and incredibly intelligent people in there. So it was a great vibe.
Cool. Thank you. Yeah, some point, because it's four episodes, so it's nearly 4 hours long. I feel like at some point by the third or fourth episode, it's like, are we still chasing the octopus here? Or what? Yeah. You know what big vibes it gave me? Jesse Ventura's conspiracy theory and all this generated drama where they drive Michael Recconosciuto around like someone's trying to kill him still. Like he couldn't have been whacked in prison for 30 years. It had very, very hyped up, overdramatic vibes to it. They never said the word Coachella, which is where the Cabazon Indian tribe had their lands that let Recconosciuto and Robert Earl, all this stuff, chemical weapons and weapons tests. Never said the word Coachella, and they, of course, never said the words Robert Maxwell or Epstein. So a bit limited hangouts, but again, maybe in the hopes, and it's certainly not as good as Oliver Stone's JFK, but maybe in those sort of mainstreamy ways, there's got to be people who watch that and are like, is this real? Is this legit? And they go down the rabbit hole, and hey, maybe before we know it, we'll find them here in the New World Next Week Kingdom. NewWorldNextWeek.com is a way to support our work. You've never heard an ad, you've never heard us shilling some crazy crap, and you've never seen us throw our beliefs under the bus every new political season. James, I remember back in the day. So I used to get all the podcasts every day and listen to them overnight at the grocery store job while I was stocking shelves. Alex Jones, Jack Blood, Webster Tarpley, James Fetzer. And I remember this episode of Fetzer when he had on Judy Wood. And now, 20 years later, I certainly have far less doubts in the directed energy weapon theories than I did then. Seems way, 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 way more possible. But there was this moment where I could hear in the voice the insincerity that I've completely changed all the things that I've talked about. And now, wow, Judy, that's really interesting. He sounded like he was an actor. I'm in media. I can catch that kind of crap pretty quickly. All of this is to say, I don't think you've ever seen me and James ever kind of do that. We might not be the best at it. We might not be the biggest, but I think we are passionate and the proof is in our pudding. NewWorldNextWeek.com has DVDs and USBs and shirts and hoodies in a way to keep us from ever having to add ads. James, I think we would probably call it in and cash it in before we would ever, oh, I have to start running ads on Media Monarchy. Now, here I'm shilling for VPNs or some LifeLock. That we would probably call it a day before we would ever do that. And I appreciate you for that, James. There it is. New World Next Week, 569, buddy.
Another one in the can and several thousand more to go. So let's keep at it. 15 years and counting, and we'll keep on as long as we can. On that note, let's end it there. James, thanks for your time.
Cheers, buddy. Thank you.